Today is Wednesday, March 15th. We're going to start on page 83 with muscle excitation and contraction. So, I do want to share with you that there's some websites out there that have really good information. This getbodysmart.com website is a fantastic place to look. It is a free website. You don't have to log in. And they have muscle physiology tutorials. So if you're interested in looking at what they've got, getbodysmart.com is a good place to look. The Mastering A&P website that accompanies your textbook has a code that may have come with your purchase. If you have not yet logged into that website, you'll need a code from me as well. It's in our content area. And that Mastering A&P website is a fantastic resource. On that website, they also have muscle stuff like sliding filament theory, which we're going to talk about today. They talk about motor units and neuromuscular junctions. So that is another great place to take a look. It used to come on a DVD called the IP10, but now they've just housed all that material on the Mastering A&P website. So a couple of places where you can get some really good outside help. So I want to start you by talking about these two terms, excitation and contraction. They sound like million-dollar words when you put them together, but they're two separate processes. In order for a muscle to contract, we first have to excite that muscle. And the process of exciting the muscle is called excitation. Now, for our discussion, excitation is going to involve a neurotransmitter. Neurotransmitters are chemical communicators. They typically travel from one neuron to another neuron, or from a neuron to a muscle cell. So it's chemical communication since that muscle and nerve don't technically touch. Now, thinking back to Monday's class, do you happen to recall the name of our neurotransmitter? ACH, acetylcholine, or ACH, good. And that particular neurotransmitter specifically is a communicating chemical between nerve cells and skeletal muscle cells. In response to exciting a muscle cell, we should see that muscle cell contract, and that contraction involves our sliding filament theory. Keep in mind for Monday, those filaments are pulled and sliding past one another. There, in fact, is no shortening of the individual filaments. Rather, what we see is a shortening of a unit called what? Sarcomere. Good. So that sarcomere unit, we're going to watch shorten. So let me ask you this. Is it possible for a muscle to contract without the excitation process? No, you got to have excitation first, and then contraction should follow. So excitation is a requirement for muscle contraction to occur. All right, anyone still need the slide? So on Monday, we talked about this concept of a motor unit. A motor unit is a unit that includes a motor neuron, all those axon terminals that look like fingertips, and the muscles that are being stimulated. So in this picture, the motor unit is the entire picture. It's that motor unit or motor neuron at the top left, all the little branched endings that we call axon terminals, and all of these muscle cells that are being stimulated. Okay? So when you have a motor unit release acetylcholine onto all of these muscle cells, all of these muscle cells should contract in response. So that means they work together as a unit to contract. Let me put it to you this way. We have lots of motor units within, say, biceps brachii. If I'm going to pick up something lightweight like this remote control, I may not need but a few motor units to pick up a lightweight object. So I'm going to turn on with my brain a few of those motor units. A few of those skeletal muscles contract in response. What if I decide that I want to pick up this entire table? So now I need more motor units to stimulate more muscle cells to contract. So my brain turns on even more of those motor neurons to excite those muscle cells. So even within a singular muscle, we've got numerous motor units that can do that job of turning on and exciting those muscle cells. It depends on how much work you have to do. Now, by contrast, a neuromuscular junction is the singular relationship between an axon terminal and the skeletal muscle that's being stimulated. Let's go back to this picture. These little fingertip-like endings, these are axon terminals, and they sit almost touching those muscle cells underneath. So you can see when we zoom in, there's an axon terminal that's going to stimulate that one individual muscle cell, and here's another one sitting up top. You can see in this picture the skeletal muscle is running across at an angle. Coming in from the right-hand side, you've got that axon, or several axon terminals, traveling across to stimulate those muscle cells. And another look at them here. The catch is, when you're talking about a neuromuscular junction, there in fact is no direct contact between the axon terminal and that underlying muscle cell. There is a gap of space in between. That gap of space is called what? Synaptic cleft, good. So this is yet another view of a neuromuscular junction. It is the specific relationship between your single axon terminal and the skeletal muscle being stimulated. You can see there actually isn't a touch going on there, but there's a gap of space. Since there is not a touch, we have to communicate using chemical neurotransmitters. And our specific one for our discussion today is what? ACH, right, acetylcholine. So that's going to be the way that our nerve cell communicates and tells our muscle cell to get excited, and the excitement's going to promote a muscle contraction. Okay, so if you weren't here Monday, there is a blank about halfway down page 83. The gap between the sarcolemma of your muscle cell and the axon terminals is called the synaptic cleft. Okay, are you so far so good with these terms? Sure.
On 84, 4A, is that the acetylcholine?
That's actually calcium.
Calcium?
Yeah. If you're ready, we're going to talk about excitation about halfway down page 83. The excitement portion must come before we can contract the muscle, and the excitement comes from the motor neuron that communicates with that skeletal muscle. So you'll notice that excitation begins as an action potential reaches the axon terminals. I want to put out there that the word action potential is the same thing as a nerve impulse. Let's think big picture here. Where does the nerve impulse to move your body come from? Your brain, yeah. So if you think about picking up your pen or your pencil, if you think about scratching your leg, touching your face, moving your arm, all of those thoughts to move have to come from your brain. So ultimately, your brain initiates these action potentials or nerve impulses. Okay, so instead of just staring at this picture here for the next 10 or 15 minutes, going to raise the screen, and why don't we walk and talk through this using a picture. There is a picture over on page 84 that I'll help you label, and so that'll help us kind of work through this material. So we touched on a little bit of this in class on Monday, so now I'd like to go back in and make sure we got all the details covered. The process of excitation starts when a nerve impulse or an action potential comes from your brain, travels down your spinal cord and out some of those motor neurons that are going to stimulate your muscle cells to contract. So we're going to use our axon terminal here to illustrate that we have a nerve impulse that's arriving. Okay, so when that nerve impulse arrives in the axon terminal, that nerve impulse or excitement is going to open up a certain type of channel sitting on your axon terminal. So there are little channels here that are called calcium channels. And when that nerve impulse travels down the length of your axon terminal, the excitement is so great that it opens up those calcium channels. Calcium that's sitting in your interstitial fluids will now flow into those axon terminals. Okay, so calcium is going to flow in. We've got so far that an action potential and nerve impulse arrives in your axon terminal. That excitement's going to open up a calcium channel on your axon terminal. Those calcium channels allow interstitial fluid with calcium in it to flow into your axon terminal. So that entry of calcium is going to be a critical step for us. Now keep in mind, most of our calcium is not floating around in our interstitial fluids. Where's most of it stored? In your bones, yeah. So if you happen to need some more calcium for this step, then your bones can give it up for us. Your bones can release it in response to PTH. You may recall that hormone raises blood calcium levels, and we use osteoclast to break down that bone matrix. So the catch here is, this is calcium that's not necessarily directly from your bones, but rather in circulation in your fluids. So our next step, of course, is calcium enters the axon terminals. Okay, so the presence of calcium inside your axon terminal allows us to let vesicles, which are little sacs of neurotransmitter, to exit our axon terminal. So sitting here like little blisters in the ends of your axon terminal are these bags or sacs known as vesicles. These vesicles are full of neurotransmitter, and of course ours is ACH or acetylcholine. So I'm just going to put some acetylcholine in those sacs. Okay, so excitation from the top starts like this. A nerve impulse is traveling from your brain down your spinal cord out a motor neuron, and that nerve impulse or action potential arrives at these terminals. They're called axon terminals. Now, our job is to excite the muscle cell and tell it to contract. But once that axon terminal receives an action potential, we open up a specific type of channel called a calcium channel. Calcium takes advantage and flows into your axon terminals, and having calcium inside is critical because it allows for us to let these vesicles full of neurotransmitter leave. Exocytosis is a term we used way back when we discussed membrane transport. This particular membrane transport is what we call bulk transport, and so you take those big vesicles full of neurotransmitter, you move them to the plasma membrane, and you let them just pop out like a blister. So I kind of have this like mental image of a goodie bag erupting and all of these acetylcholine molecules popping out. And so it literally does rupture like a blister. All those acetylcholines are now sitting there in your synaptic cleft outside your axon terminal. Does this make sense so far? Okay, do you have any questions on any part so far? Can't say, okay. All right, so what happens next? Where do those acetylcholine molecules go?
Different
Then you go to the muscle. Which, that's a start. I'll take that. Okay. Do they go in the muscle? On the outside, yeah, okay, so that's the catch. So on Monday we were talking about going to the movie theater, and I'm gonna say that I'm 8 years old, and my mom has let me go to the movie theater, but she didn't wanna see the movie, so she drives up, she goes to the box office, she pays for me to get in, and then she goes home. She comes back to pick me up when she's done, right? So having mom pay for me at the box office, mom's not going in the movie theater. She's just paid to open the gates for me, right? She's just paid for me to be able to get in. So that's what acetylcholine does. Acetylcholine comes over to those sodium channels. They bind to a receptor on those sodium channels. And it's kind of like paying your fee at the box office at the movies. And of course, that allows you to get in. But not acetylcholine. Something else is going to go through those channels. What is it? Sodium. Yeah, sodium's going to go through. So let's put an ACH there on one of those sodium channels. So having acetylcholine bind a receptor on those channels, it's going to let those sodium channels open. Ticket to get in the movies. The sodium channel is open. You can walk through that open channel and enter into that muscle cell. So all of these sodium channels that bind ACH are going to allow sodium to come into these muscle cells. So it's critical that you have enough sodiums come flooding into your muscle cell in order for muscle contraction to occur. If you don't have a slow trickle of sodiums come in, that's not going to be really enough to excite your muscle cell, and excitation may not occur. I don't want to put the cart before the horse and talk about threshold and all those topics that come in the next chapter, but we're going to talk about a critical value that must be hit before you can actually excite the muscle cell. So the reason for it is you don't necessarily want little trickles of sodium to cause muscle twitches all the time. You'd be moving about uncontrollably if that was the case. So we have to have a certain number of those sodiums come in before we can actually say that we've reached an excitement level. But I'll save all the details of that for when we get into that next chapter. So we're just going to say for now that if you've got enough sodiums rush in, then we're going to have a process of excitation take place. And when we excite that muscle cell, we come over to those sarcoplasmic reticula that wrap around our myofibrils. And what do those sarcoplasmic reticulums release? Calcium. Yeah. So that'll start the next part of the process. Before we take our story to contraction, I'd like to point out some things on the bottom of page 83. You'll notice a term down there in bold. It's called acetylcholinesterase. So near the bottom of page 83, look for acetylcholinesterase. So here is your acetylcholinesterase. It looks like a little Pac-Man. And this is an enzyme that comes along and recycles acetylcholine. So as long as acetylcholine sits on those sodium channels, what happens to the sodium outside your muscle cell?
It keeps
going in. And as long as sodium keeps entering your muscle cell, what happens to your muscle cell? Stays in excitation. And if it stays in excitation, we're telling that muscle cell, hey, contract. So as long as we leave acetylcholine sitting attached to one of those muscle or neurotransmitters sitting on those sodium channels, you're going to have an excitation event that continues on and on and on. That's a muscle cramp, right? Okay? So if you've ever worn shoes, like maybe you normally wear flat shoes and you wear shoes with a different build to them, you may wake up with a Charlie horse or cramp in your leg during the night. That may be simply an excess of neurotransmitter that stays bound to those sodium channels and keeps the channels open. So if you keep the channels open, you stay excited. How do we recycle and get rid of those acetylcholine molecules? ACHE, right. So I made the joke on Monday that if you don't have ACHE, you're going to ache with a muscle cramp, because you've got to recycle that acetylcholine to prevent further unwanted muscle contractions. So when you recycle acetylcholine, you package it into acetyl and choline, you send it back up into your axon terminal, and your axon terminal repackages it as acetylcholine so that within a split second later, you can actually have another muscle contraction take place. But the whole goal here is for acetylcholine to be recycled and to prevent further unwanted muscle contractions. That is the goal of acetylcholinesterase. Okay, so if you weren't here Monday, make sure you fill in that blank with me down at the bottom of 83. It says the enzyme ACHE breaks down ACH, and the reason for it is to prevent further unwanted muscle contractions and to recycle acetylcholine. Sure. Ache, A-C-H-E, is there to prevent further unwanted muscle contractions. To prevent further unwanted muscle contractions. And to recycle acetylcholine. By the way, there's also blank for number 3. It says acetylcholine causes your sarcolemma to become temporarily permeable to what types of ions? Sodium. Good. So if you don't have that blank, make sure you fill that one in. Temporarily permeable to sodium. So if you flip to the top of page 84, now I bet we can label all those parts. On the top of page 84, you've got a picture of an axon terminal stimulating a muscle cell. And you'll notice on the axon terminal, there's letter A with something coming into our axon terminal. What is that?
Calcium.
Calcium, good. So on your picture, top of page 84, letter A is calcium ions. The entry of calcium ions into your muscle cell allows for vesicles full of neurotransmitter to leave. They leave by exocytosis. So what does letter B show us? ACH, good. So letter B shows us acetylcholine or ACH. Well, acetylcholine diffuses across the synaptic cleft. It binds to receptors on sodium channels. And which letter represents that?
C.
That is letter C. Good. So letter C shows us acetylcholine binding a receptor. Letter C shows us acetylcholine binding a receptor. And what happens next in letter D?
Sodium rushes into.
Good. Sodium rushes into your muscle cell. Okay, so let's hit this one more time from the top. An action potential is the same thing as what? Excitement or a nerve impulse, right? Okay, so an action potential is a nerve impulse. It arrives in your axon terminal. That thought to move comes from your brain. And when the excitement arrives in your axon terminal, the excitement opens up a certain type of channel. What type of channel is that? Calcium, good. So we let calcium enter into your axon terminal, and why is it important for us to have calcium in there? It lets vesicles of
exit.
Yeah, it lets vesicles of neurotransmitter exit. So calcium comes into your axon terminals. It's important to have it because it allows us to let vesicles of neurotransmitter leave. When those vesicles rupture like blisters, it's exocytosis, those acetylcholine molecules diffuse across your synaptic cleft, and what do they bind to?
Sodium
channels, good. Now, does acetylcholine enter your muscle cell? No, it doesn't. All it does is open up the sodium channels. And what happens next? Sodium moves into your muscle cell. Good. So I drew up here these T-tubules. There are even sodium channels down in there. And so that puts the action or the excitement directly into the interior of your muscle cell. So we do have these T-tubules scattered along the length of your sarcolemma. That way we can just tell the whole muscle cell at once, hey, get excited. And once it's excited, it will contract. Now, to prevent further unwanted excitement, how do we get rid of excess acetylcholine? ACHE, good. Where does it put that acetylcholine? Back into the axon terminal, good. If you've taken a psych class, they may have talked to you about reuptake. This is reuptake. It's taking that acetylcholine, moving it back up into your axon terminal so you can recycle and use it again. Okay. So that half of the story is excitation. And on page 84, halfway down, we are now going to talk about contraction. Before we head there, do you have any questions so far about excitation? Okay. So you'll notice there it says for contraction, the action potential, which is the excitement, moves into the sarcoplasm of your muscle cell. In plain English, what is the sarcoplasm? Cytoplasm, yeah. Sarcoplasm is cytoplasm. But the catch is they call it sarcoplasm because it's the muscle cell. Exactly, good. Okay. So these T-tubules are like little indentations in your muscle cells, sarcolemma. And once again, in plain English, sarcolemma means plasma membrane of your muscle cell. Excitement comes into your muscle cell. The excitement travels to your sarcoplasmic reticulum. Hey, let's just call it SR for short. That's easier than saying sarcoplasmic reticulum every time. That sarcoplasmic reticulum is a lacy sleeve. It's an organelle that wraps around another organelle called a myofibril. Okay, so the SR's job is to store calcium. And that SR is located around the outside of your myofibril. Keep in mind, your myofibril is a long, skinny organelle. It is the unit inside your muscle that contracts and shortens. Come to art class today, all right? Okay, so when you get excited, this neurotransmitter that's bound to our sodium channels lets in sodium. Sodium comes to your SR. That excitement is going to cause your SR to release calcium. Now that once we're inside our muscle cell, we have a second job for calcium. Calcium comes to your actin or thin filaments, and these thin filaments actually have three components. In Monday's class, I joked about them being called AT&T, and that stands for the three parts of a typical thin filament: actin molecules, troponin, and a rope-like structure called tropomyosin. So when calcium is released from your SR around this structure here, we're looking at those teeny tiny thin filaments. So calcium comes to the troponin complex and binds that troponin complex. When calcium binds to troponin, what happens next? Good, it moves that rope of tropomyosin and it reveals binding sites that are sitting where? On the actin, good. So that's our job now, is to cause that troponin complex to move, revealing binding sites on those actin molecules. Okay, so if you have a blank that you haven't yet filled in on the bottom of page 84, that is for the term sarcoplasmic reticulum, or you can simply call it SR for short. So down there on the bottom of page 84, under number 1, the action potential causes the sarcoplasmic reticulum, or SR, to release calcium. We've actually got two uses for calcium here. We've got calcium being involved in the axon terminal, and now we've got calcium being involved in binding to that troponin complex on our actin filaments. Now that we've revealed our binding sites by moving off that rope-like tropomyosin, we can start what's called a cross-bridge cycle. And you may recall from Monday, we talked about myosin heads reaching up and binding to those actin filaments. And once they bind, they're called a cross-bridge. So that's going to be our next step, is cross-bridge can be formed. So let me explain cross-bridge formation like this. A lot of times they describe this whole process of moving a muscle like rowing a boat. If you've got a boat and you've got a set of oars and you put your oars in the water, you're not going to move anywhere. You've just got your oars in the water, that's all, right? So if you have your myosin heads reach up and bind to those actin filaments, forming a cross-bridge, that does not mean that you're going to shorten your muscle. Something has to happen in order for you to shorten your muscle. Just like if you put your oars in the water and you just sit there, you're not going to be going anywhere. You have to actually take and stroke the water to get yourself to move. Same concept here with your muscle cells. In order for you to get your muscle to shorten and contract, cross-bridge formation, where you've got the head bound to a thin filament, must actually cause a power stroke. So that's going to be our next step. In order to make your muscle shorten and slide, then we have to do a power stroke, which means that myosin head that reaches up and binds to your actin filament pivots. And so when it pivots, it causes your thin filaments to slide past your thick ones. That is the basis for the sliding filament theory. So the next step we're going to put down is power stroke occurs. Okay, so I never run out of space down there at the bottom, but that power stroke is critical for getting those thin filaments to slide. Now, once you've pivoted the head, we're going to release that head using ATP, and ATP powers the head back into a relaxed position. As long as your binding sites are available, you can repeat steps, and that says C, D, and E, okay? So as long as you've got the binding sites revealed, you can repeat steps C, D, and E. So now that we've taken care of excitation, let's repeat once more through contraction. When you get the influx of sodiums into your muscle cell, that excitement tells your SR to release stored calcium. That calcium travels over here to one of your thin filaments. That calcium binds to troponin. When troponin and calcium are bound together, that causes a rope of tropomyosin to move. Why is it important for that rope-like structure to move? Good. Reveal those binding sites. Good. So when you get the binding sites revealed, those myosin heads on the thick filament can reach up and form what? Cross bridges. Good. It is not enough to form a cross bridge. You have to then pivot the head, causing a power stroke. Good. And that power stroke is going to pull along and make those thin filaments slide. That is the basis for why we call this a sliding filament theory. So in order for you to pull and shorten your muscle, you have to release the head. You do that with ATP. And then you start back with another cross bridge, another power stroke, and you keep doing this until you pull and shorten that muscle. This can happen in a split second. How fast can you move? Well, that's how fast these filaments can slide past one another. So the whole process of excitation and contraction can take less than a half of a second's time. You know, and if you've really been jolted into a scare, you can move even faster than that through reflexes. So this process is a split second movement process. So what I'd like to do now is walk you through two animations. I've got one for excitation and I've got another one for contraction. And I hope that by the time you leave here today, you feel more or less comfortable with this process. Do you have any questions before we look at the animations? I'm going to stay out of the way in case anybody needs a picture. Can y'all see for the glare on the window over there? Good. Anybody else? Deidre, okay. Okay. How about questions so far on this topic? It's a lot. This is the big one for Bio2TM. So, since we don't have Sam in here, I'll be your narrator for today. So you're looking at a motor unit, and now you're zooming in on the neuromuscular junction. A neuromuscular junction is the specific relationship between an axon terminal, one of these, and the specific muscle cell that's being stimulated. And so they call it a motor end plate because that's where the communication for excitement takes place. So you may recognize this as your sarcolemma, and there's some of those channels, those sodium channels, down there in your muscle cell. This thing up here that looks like a golf club or a sperm, that is your axon terminal. You may have noticed a flash of light just come along. That was the action potential. And that action potential is going to allow a certain type of molecule to flow into your axon terminal. And they've just showed us their calcium channels are going to open. Why is it important for calcium to be in your axon terminal? That's why, right? Let ACH leave. So it is the presence of calcium that lets ACH leave by exocytosis, and it floats into your synaptic cleft. And notice here it's binding receptors on those sodium channels. and watch what happens to those sodium channels. Okay, so they opened up. Sodium ions are going to flow into your muscle cell, and that influx of sodium causes what?
Excitation,
right. Now, you may notice there's something blue leaving through those channels. That's actually a totally different story. We'll talk more about potassium later on, and they don't even leave through the same channel. So we'll talk more about their role when we get to the nervous system. You notice a flash of light across the length. There it goes down your T-tubules. That is the excitation traveling along the length of your muscle cell. And then at the very bottom of that picture, you might have seen some of those sarcoplasmic reticulum. Those are going to release calcium. Now, we're done with our muscle excitement. We don't want to continue exciting our muscle. What should we do with acetylcholine?
Break it down.
Break it down. Good. What recycles acetylcholine? Good. And notice it looks like a Pac-Man here, too. And, of course, it sends that acetylcholine back up into your axon terminals. And we can recycle and reuse that acetylcholine for another go-around. So just some thoughts to consider here. What would happen to your muscle cell if there was no acetylcholine or no acetylcholinesterase? You'd never relax. You would ache. Yeah, your muscles would stay contracted and excited. What would your muscles do if there was too much acetylcholinesterase? You never would contract, right? Yes, if you had too much acetylcholinesterase, you may never contract in the first place. Okay. Okay, so this is a story that we actually started in class on Monday. Now that we've excited our muscle cell, we're going to carry a thought forward with contraction. We know that contraction involves a cross-bridge cycle, and this whole process of making the muscle contract is called a sliding filament theory. We know that what actually shortens inside a muscle is this unit here called a sarcomere. Those filaments, in fact, do not shorten. They only slide past one another. For reference, these red ones are your thick filaments made of myosin. What are the yellow ones? Good. Thin filaments, actin. Which one's anchored to your Z lines? Thin or actin. Good. So they're showing us a thick filament with a myosin head. Up top, you'll notice calcium ions are attaching to your troponin complex. That's on your thin filaments. Once calcium binds, what should happen to your tropomyosin rope? Should move. Good. Why is it important for that rope to move? Reveal those binding sites. Good. Okay. So you'll notice that head has already bound to a thin filament. It has pivoted to release that head. They're going to cause an ATP molecule to float in here. That helps the head unattach and release so you can start again. And trust me, in reality, this is slow motion, right? We would never move anywhere if we were going this slow, but in reality, this is a split-second process. So how do you know that we're ready for muscle contraction? By looking at this picture. Binding sites are revealed. Good. That myosin head now can reach up and form an attachment with those thin filaments. What's the attachment called? Cross bridge, yeah. And then the pivoting of that head is called a power stroke. What does that help us do? Contract. Yeah, pull, slide those thin filaments. And if you slide those thin filaments, that allows them to move, and that's going to contract our muscle. But we can only move so far, so the head has to be released using what?
ATP.
We repeat the process as long as those binding sites are revealed, and so we can repeat the cross bridge and the power stroke until we shorten our muscle. This is the best part of this animation. You'll notice the heads are what they call walking along those thin filaments. And in walking along, they're pulling and sliding those thin yellow filaments past the red thick filaments. Watch what happens. What's going to happen to your H zone here in the middle? It's going to disappear. These I bands here disappear. And the length of your sarcomere from Z line to Z line, what happens to it?
Shortens.
It shortens. When you're done and no more muscle contraction is needed, you actually restore your calcium inside your muscle cell in what organelle? Sarcoplasmic reticulum. Good. When you store it, notice those binding sites are covered up and you can no longer form a what? Crossbridge. Yeah, crossbridge formation is done. So that allows for your muscle to return to its relaxed state. Do you want to see both of these again, or do you feel pretty comfortable?
And
you can watch it online. Sure can. And they actually narrate it on there too. Yeah.
I have a question. So ATP is only used to release the head?
It's actually involved in the powering of the head too. But I mainly mention it as a release molecule, but it does actually both power stroke and release. Yeah. Well, I've got a puzzle for you guys to play with then. There's two sides to the puzzle. There is muscle contraction on the side that says chapter 9. I know we're in chapter 10, but this is from an old textbook reference. Hold on to this thing, because next week we're going to do the chapter 11 side on nerve impulse transmission. So I just tried to save some paper by putting it on double sides. So you're welcome to work with somebody. You're going to want to put these in order from step 1 to step 11. And there's both excitation and contraction on here.
Yeah.